Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, welcome to a special podcast from the Pop Shop family. We got I'm Andrew Unterberger from Coming Around Again. We have Jason Lipschitz and Joe Lynch from the Must Hear Music podcast.
What's up?
Hello.
And we're here today to talk all things Justin Timberlake and
Mr. JT.
Two of the three of us here today are sick, so this is going to be an interesting one. Jason might not.
Are you guys both sick? I didn't know that. Why am I in a small room with you guys?
This is a trap for you, I think. But
a trap.
We're going to talk through our sore throats and congested noses and hopefully do Mr. Timberlake justice. So the first and most important question to talk about, I think, when talking about Justin Timberlake is, were you guys NSYNC or Backstreet Boys people growing up?
Backstreet Boys. I still am.
I was not super on either team. Mm-hmm. I was pretty much solidly in the Britney Spears fan zone.
the third party option, sure.
My sister played both of their albums a lot. I definitely gravitated towards the NSYNC songs more, but I would not say I at any point considered myself a fan of either group.
In any way, really?
Certainly when they were big, I was like, they're whatever. I was definitely
too old into your kind of like cynical classic rock phase, or
I guess. I mean, I did like pop. I wasn't against either of them. I wasn't on track with any of the boy bands back in the day.
Meanwhile, I follow them like very closely, in the sense that like I was listening to a lot of like as most like 13-year-old like suburban white guys would. I was listening to like a lot of like angry rock and dumb rock, like Limp Bizkit and Korn and all that. But I also like was a big pop fan. I like loved I Want It That Way. I loved Bye Bye Bye. And pop, like I remember when pop, like the video came out with the song and I was like, oh my god, this is so awesome. Like he was saying chain around his neck, that's cool.
Yeah, I thought the NSYNC videos were incredible.
Yeah, NSYNC definitely had the better videos.
They were just kind of like a little bit edgier in general. Yeah. Like, I mean, Backstreet Boys, you know, they get credit for coming first and kind of setting the template.
Yep.
I mean, coming first in their generation anyway. But NSYNC, I think, yeah, they had the stronger videos, the stronger songs, and they were kind of like... It wasn't surprising that it was someone from NSYNC to make the jump to solo adult stardom over someone from Backstreet Boys.
J.C. Chazé.
Yeah, you can't go anywhere without talking about that guy.
I will say, yeah, even though I was a bigger Backstreet Boys fan, NSYNC did a better job of like carving out the different personalities. Like JT and JC were clearly like the front men. Joey was like the funny one. Lance was like the pretty boy. And then like Chris was the guy with the hair. Like that was all you really needed to know.
See, like the interesting thing for me was that like while these groups were kind of running the world, I never had any opinions about them as individuals. Like, if you would ask me to name a member of NSYNC, like even in 1999, 2000, I'm not sure that I could have done it.
Oh, wow.
Like, and even today, like, I have to really think about it to think, okay, that's a song where JC sings lead. That's a song where JT is, you know, it's obviously his writing on it. Like, for whatever reason, like, once you get into that kind of boy band sphere, like, I stop differentiating between individuals, especially when they're all kind of packaged the same. They're dancing the same. They're dressed the same.
Yeah.
Like, the only group from that time that I knew very discreetly the members and their individual identities was the Spice Girls, because they all, like, were wildly individual in their personas and stuff. But you actually had, you know, did you have a favorite member of NSYNC at the time?
I I don't really remember. I remember liking Joey just because, like, he was the goofy one. Like, you know, if you watch, like, the old NSYNC videos, like, there's usually at least, like, one or two funny Joey Fatone moments. But in terms of, like, musically, I don't think I paid that close attention. I definitely was a huge AJ fan in Backstreet Boys. Like, when he does his part in All I Have to Give, like, he completely owns that song. Anyway, this is a different podcast.
No, that's all well and good. And I suppose I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit asking that question to begin with. I should mention that we're talking about Justin Timberlake to honor the upcoming release of Man of the Woods, not Man of the West, which I want to call it every time I say
Man
its
of the
name.
West, you just kind of think Man of the Woods.
That's right. You do the little Jack Antonoff there. So we're recording this podcast on a Tuesday. The album's coming out on a Friday. Justin Timberlake's playing the Super Bowl 2 days after that. It's all very exciting, and we wanted to kind of do a run through JT's catalog and some of our favorites and least favorites and just opinions about the man over the years. I did want to start with NSYNC. You know, we don't have to go through all the NSYNC albums, but, you know, just kind of general opinions. Do you guys have a favorite NSYNC song or album? I know, Joe, you said you're not a huge fan, but is there one song that kind of stands out as one of their best or that you're able to make an exception for?
I think Tearing Up My Heart is pretty remarkable. And, you know, it's very of its age, but it's also, I don't want to say timeless, but it's just a great pop song and a great, like, pump-up song.
Have you seen, there's a J.G. Wentworth, I believe, commercial out currently that, like, very closely copies the style of the Tearing Up My Heart video, like, with kind of, you know, the white shirts and, like, the wind blowing.
I haven't seen this.
Really?
I've not seen that.
It's kind of fantastic. I recommend tracking it down on YouTube if possible. But yeah, that's obviously a classic. What about you? What's your NSYNC era of choice, Jason?
Man, I mean, definitely the No Strings Attached era. But I would say probably Gone, which is obviously, like, an incredible song. It might still be. I will say, though, that, like, legit, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays is, like, one of my top five favorite holiday songs. Like, it's just a great song. It's a really, really fun song.
That entire era, like, the TRL era, has, like, aged very well for their holiday music, I think.
Yeah, the Hanson holiday album is pretty supreme.
Snowed in, man. Yeah.
And you'll hear those songs on radio stations next to, like, Bing Crosby and Mariah Carey. Like it's definitely kind of made that jump to the historical canon.
I retract my earlier statement. I didn't think about this as an NSYNC song, but this is by far my favorite NSYNC song is I Drive Myself Crazy.
Oh, that's a good one, actually.
Which is, like, a very, like, underrated single.
But really, your all-time favorite?
Yeah,
NSYNC song.
I really love that song. Yeah, like, I love, like, the JC bridge. Why didn't I know it? Great song. Yeah.
Yeah, a good ballads. I mean, like, I think Backstreet Boys were probably more renowned for their ballads, but, you know, NSYNC kind of picked their spots a little bit better, a little bit more. But you know, obviously, and you mentioned Gone. I think that's probably my favorite NSYNC song.
Yeah,
that between like that and Girlfriend, also off of the Pop album.
Yeah,
I guess
Celebrity. Those, you mean.
Oh, I'm sorry, off of Celebrity, right? Those kind of like pointed the way, I think, to JT solo. Like between those two songs, kind of got a pretty good sense of what he was going to be doing once he broke free. But that entire album is pretty great. Like,
yeah, Celebrity is really good.
Yeah, like, I love comparing it to like just like music that sounds like it's being recorded inside of a pinball machine.
Yeah.
And there's kind of bells and whistles and high scores and all crazy sound effects going everywhere. And it almost sounds like it was influenced by like Aphex Twin and like Square Pusher and like very like avant dance guys of their time period. And it kind of pushed the envelope for pop production. And it showed that they had, you know, obviously weightier concerns than teen pop and TRL life and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I would definitely say that, you know, the two big albums for those boy bands were Millennium for Backstreet Boys and No Strings Attached for NSYNC. And I think that NSYNC definitely, like, pushed themselves more or, like, were pushed more, I guess, however you want to describe it, with this follow-up Celebrity. Like, Black and Blue from Backstreet Boys is just a little bit more of the same. Still really good, but the Celebrity album, like, really, like you said, like, it really did, like, try to incorporate way more like hip hop and R&B, and then you had like this big ballad with Gone, and pop is like the obviously the big single, but like it was a great album.
Do you guys remember like the first time you saw or experienced JT solo? Was it at the VMAs that year, or did you hear one of the songs on the radio? Like, what was your first impression of JT post NSYNC?
I know my sister bought the album as soon as it came out, and I listened to it. Well, I remember also that when it came out, Rolling Stone ran a 4-star review of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't remember that.
That was very surprising because, you know, they weren't like exactly on the NSYNC train.
I think they were in on a Celebrity as well, if I remember correctly.
It might have been. Yeah. But couple that with her having the CD in the room next to mine, I immediately put it on and was like very knocked out by it. I can't remember if I was already a Neptunes fan at that point. But like I Love You and just, I mean, also Senorita is like the most fun. So like basically the second it came out, I was a fan, and I was not a big NSYNC fan before then, but, by virtue of a Rolling Stone review and very easy
Rolling
access.
Rolling Stone getting the kids into NSYNC and Justin
basically,
Timberlake. Sure,
yeah.
I do remember that like I Love You performance where it was like Justin Timberlake's first solo performance.
Yeah.
And the thing that stood out to me was that I was a Clips fan. Like, so like the, you know, cause I loved like, When the Last Time and Grindin'.
Sure.
And I just remember thinking like, even though they had done a song with like Nelly, I was just like, man, like Justin Timberlake got Clips on his single.
Isn't Malice like wearing a, like a patty cake man t-shirt in the video in the VMA's performance? It's something.
I don't remember. I have no idea.
Like, you should go back and watch that sometime. He looks like a 9-year-old dressing up as Michael Jackson. He's got this like gigantic boombox set. Like you watch that performance and it's 50-50 whether or not this thing is going to work or not. Like,
yeah.
It's I mean, the song like I Love You I think is one of his best songs.
Yeah, I agree.
And like an incredibly weird pop song, like it's got like 4 different bridges, and it's got, you know, the Clips rap, and it's got like the weird outro, but it's got an amazing energy and an awesome hook, and but yeah, like you go back and you look at some of like the early reviews and some of the early the first week sales and things like that, and it was a hit, but it seemed like people were kind of hedging their bets with him a little bit. It wasn't a sure thing that this guy was going to be a superstar. So it's like, when do you remember like knowing for a fact this guy was going to be like the next guy?
I think it was probably Cry Me River. Okay. Like, I think that, like, I remember like I Love You was like you described it, like, it, I loved it. I thought it was such an awesome song. And I just remember it not being that huge, but I remember when Cry Me River, it just was way more like pervasive. And obviously you had like the whole Britney Spears thing.
Sure.
And like people seemed to pay more attention to Cry Me River. So that was kind of when it was like, oh man, like he's, and then it was like, I Love You, then Cry Me River, then Rock Your Body, and then Senorita. Those were the 4 singles. So
for me, it was Rock Your Body. Like I was projecting when asking Joe earlier, I was definitely at the height of my like indie snob phase in 2002, 2003. So like I was really not repping for most mainstream pop music.
Yeah.
But I couldn't deny Rock Your Body. Like I saw that. I remember I was sick home from school one day, and I saw the video on MTV, and it's a pretty cool video too, but although his beatboxing breakdown is maybe a little bit excessive.
Yeah.
but like, it's just such a great disco song, and like an amazing hook, the back and forth, the male and female vocal. Like that song I found totally irresistible, and I was hooked from there. And Joe, you already mentioned Senorita. I mean, is that like the best 4th single of any pop album in history?
Without it, I mean, I think it's like the best song on the album. Uh-huh. For me personally, at any rate. I just did a karaoke like 2 weeks
really?
Ago.
Did you get a good call and response?
Oh, I got some great call and response.
Oh, very nice.
No, but for me, what you were saying, like, when did you realize he was like the guy? Like, it was also Rock Your Body, because that was when it was just this monster single. Like I Love You is also, I think, that and Senorita are the best songs, but Cry Me a River, obviously a smash that was just played over and over on the radio. But that was the same thing with Rock Your Body, and by the time he had a song that was just like endlessly on the radio, I was like, okay, like, this is not a fluke. This isn't just the NSYNC guy like getting a big hit. This is like a guy who's going to be around.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And real quick, not necessarily JT specific, but shout out to the Neptunes in 2002, man. They
murdered it.
Lord Willin' by the Clips. They had Hot in Here by Nelly. They had Pascavoisier. They had like a half dozen other just major hits.
I'm a Slave for You. Was that 02?
It might have been. It was either 01
or 02.
When
was the Britney album, Joe?
It was, I can't around remember. Then. It was 01 or 02. And then, of course, In Search Of.
Right, yeah. I knew there was another big one I was missing.
And there's a NERD shout out on Like I Love
You
when they say
it was
the word brain.
Want your brain. Yeah, Britney was late 01.
But yeah, what a year. What a run.
I know.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah. I remember like going back to Cry Me a River, which is when I really had that kind of epiphany about him. Like, I just remember the end of that song is like so like moving, and like it's so like ballsy, like, for lack of a better word. Like, if that really goes for it,
yeah,
like with
it's
the
nice build.
With the core, like with the choir and just like the sound effects and the falsetto at the end, like I was just like, whoa, this is This is crazy.
Yeah, like, that was actually a song. Like I remember, like, you know, I was writing it for Styles Magazine back in the day, and like that made our year end songs list. And I listened to it. I was like, oh, I'm not that impressed by this, but like one time I caught it and I was like really paying attention to like the production and yeah, like the way it swells and kind of the little things in the song. And it really is like a remarkable achievement.
Yeah.
For a pop song.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, like, you know, Justified gets a little dwarfed historically by the album that comes after it.
Mm-hmm.
Which we'll obviously talk about soon, but for me, Justified is every bit as essential. I think it's you know, especially for kind of catching the Neptunes in that peak moment and Justin Timberlake as he was just kind of starting to discover his sound and his vibe, and like there really aren't that many bad songs on it. The second half tails off a little bit, but mm-hmm. There's still some really good deep cuts towards the end, and I for me it's right up there. How do you guys kind of rate it in his overall catalog?
I like Future Sex more, but I do think like. I never really maybe you guys can talk to the non-singles more, but mm-hmm. like I never really, you know, like embrace the justified non-singles as much as I loved the singles, but I just never really.
I think the third track, which I can't remember the name of, it's the Oh No, Mr. JT, What You Got
Oh,
For
No,
Me.
Yeah.
That's just like honestly, I think as good as most of the singles. I think there are a number of songs, album tracks on that I think are as strong. As most of the singles.
Right For Me, which I think is like, I think it might be a Timbaland song. It's on the second half of the album. One of his all-time best grooves, beats, whatever.
I gotta check it. I get it, because I need to listen to it again. I remember in the moment, and, you know, I tried to go back to it later. It just never really clicked for me, but yeah.
It does get a little watery towards the end. Mm-hmm. Like,
totally.
It gets a little kind of, you know, conventional R&B, I guess.
The last song is terrible. But yeah, honestly, yeah. The last song on Future Sex Love Sounds is terrible, too. So...
Well, are you talking about Losing My Way? Are you talking about...
Another song, yeah.
Really?
Oh, get out of here,
Joe.
I don't know.
I think you're talking about Losing
My Way.
And
Losing
My
Way is bad, too.
Losing My Way is not good. But what do you have against Another Love Song? That's a really
lame.
Good song.
It's not
nah,
good.
You're crazy, man.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. But well, we'll get to that in a minute. But so before we kind of move to the second album, you know, the three of us did a similar podcast like this about Taylor Swift. When we did Taylor Swift, we had to talk about Taylor and Kanye at the VMAs. And so when we do Justin Timberlake, we got to talk about him at Super Bowl 38.
Yeah.
Were you guys watching live? Do you have any kind of memories of when it happened, when you first found out about it?
So I watched that Super Bowl. This is a true story.
Only true stories on the Pop Shop Podcast.
I watched the Super Bowl, but it was a Sunday night, and I was in high school, and I had homework to do. So I stepped away during the halftime show, and I did not see
wow.
it. Yeah,
I didn't watch it at all. Like, okay. I'm not a big sports guy, and this...
But you are a big Janet Jackson guy.
I like Janet, yeah. I mean, this was first when I got to school, to college.
Okay.
And it just, you know, like watching the Super Bowl seemed like the least exciting thing I could possibly do at that point. And so when all the like kerfuffle happened, I was extremely confused. I like the way people were talking about it, I was like, oh my God, was there a fully exposed breast? And
right.
It wasn't until weeks later, because YouTube didn't exist at this time, that I saw it. And I was like, wait, that's it? There's like, it's a breast, but it's pretty well covered up. Like, the whole thing just confused me.
To this day, I mean, I also didn't watch it live. I was not a sports fan in high school. Became one later in life. But to this day, I don't think I've ever actually seen the performance. I've seen, you know, gifs of the moment. And like you kind of saw that endlessly on like, I was a big part of like web board culture back in high school.
Yeah.
So like you would see it, you know, 100 times a week. But I can't imagine what it was like to witness this live. Like,
yeah.
I wonder if it would even register. I wonder if you would think that like it was part of it, and like we thought you saw, you didn't actually see. Like, I can't imagine kind of processing this in real time.
Yeah, it's something that like so many people have tried to like scrub from our memories at this point. And also, like, the NFL would never talk about it.
Sure.
Like Timberlake, I mean, Janet's talked about it, but like. Yeah, I mean, she also wants to move on from it. She's not going to linger on it. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about it again now, but because of the Super Bowl, but like, and it's a retrospective, but yeah, it's just like this, I feel like in like another 15 years, like we'll be like, yeah, like this happened, and people will be like, what? Like, are you, like, I feel like they won't
I don't know, it was such a big FCC thing. Like,
yeah.
They actually, like, laws kind of changed
right,
because
yeah,
of it.
Like
so I feel like,
delay, right?
Yeah, like, I feel like it'll be taught in school in a way, like, well past.
Media majors, certainly.
Media
we'll
majors will know
about
this,
yes.
Possibly, like, long after Justin Timberlake has been forgotten. No offense, Justin.
Yeah, that's very fair.
That's
and obviously, this is, you know, this has been resurfacing in the news the last couple months in the lead up to Super Bowl. What are we up to? 52 now, yeah. Did you guys have any sort of strong feelings about the way Justin Timberlake's handled it in the interim years? Do you feel like he's getting a fair shake, an unfair shake?
I think that the kind of general consensus is that he's never been the best at handling this.
Right.
But I think that if Twitter was around back then, it would have been way worse for him.
Yeah, it's hard to even imagine.
Like, just in terms of, like, the think pieces and, like, dissecting, like, his reaction. And it's kind of good for him that it happened in 2004, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking about this a little bit with our coworker Ross. You listen to Justin's like most contrite songs or like his breakup songs, it's rare that he really takes responsibility for his music. Like he's kind of like that. His brand is sort of infallibility.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I don't know if that made it harder for him to apologize or if it just makes our reaction to it. It makes it seem like this is just not something that he's capable of, is kind of expressing remorse. And I think that results in us kind of coming down on him harder than we might have otherwise. What about you, Joe? What was your feelings about it after the fact?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like what he said in interviews, like, he hasn't handled it the best, definitely, but he's not the villain in this situation. No. I feel like the idea that people have that he, like, threw her under the bus, I mean, the things I've read that he said about it do not come across that way to me. Like, you know, he's ultimately not the one, you know, pulling the strings and who derailed her career after this.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the same thing that we talk about with Bruno Mars after the Grammys. Like, Bruno Mars didn't do anything wrong necessarily
in winning a bunch
of awards.
Right.
But he also didn't put himself out there really to kind of step in front of anything and say, like, hey, you know, that this is not the way things necessarily should be, and I understand, like, I mean, maybe this is unrealistic to expect Bruno Mars to do, but I understand you know, that I'm coming from a place of advantage and that, you know, that certain other types of music are underrepresented at this thing.
It's probably unrealistic.
Probably a little unrealistic. I'm not saying he has to say that all in his acceptance speech, but he could have at least alluded to a world beyond himself.
Yep.
And Justin Timberlake could have done a little bit more at the time to say, like, hey, I appreciate that you guys aren't letting this affect my career, but you know you shouldn't be treating Janet this way either, and that this lifetime ban or whatever that the NFL enacted is ridiculous. And he didn't really stick his neck out for her.
Yeah, he could have come out stronger.
But he has in an interview since he has expressed those kind of opinions, and he's acknowledged his own privilege and you know extended more of an arm to her than he had previously. So. Is there a way to kind of make this right at the next Super Bowl, you think, or is it better for him to just kind of leave it alone?
He's going
to
leave it alone. Okay. I think it might be better for him to leave it alone. I joked on Twitter like a month or two ago when they announced him that like he should read like a 9-minute apology in his 15 minutes to Janet Jackson. I mean, like the problem is that like I was joking when I said that, and the problem is that like there's no like. Great way like I mm-hmm. like would you want him to like cover a Janet Jackson song? No. Would you want him to be like here's to Janet Jackson, like one of the greatest ever? Like that would feel kind of weird. Like there's just no, the best way he can do it is just like to kind of do what he's already done a little bit, which is just like talk about it in the press and be like, yeah, this was like a mistake, and you know, like probably could have said something a little bit stronger, but you know, I just don't know how he would do it.
Well, I guess the only thing would be if she was willing to bring her out for a guest appearance or something.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that really, I don't know if that's in her best interest.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly. It's just like, remember.
And that reminds people of that.
Exactly.
And it's something they both don't want to be reminded about.
That's probably true. So I think he probably has to grit his teeth and get through this thing.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be tough for him to come away with this with good headlines, I think. Like,
I don't know. I mean, I feel like you might be right about the headlines, but like the people who already have the pitchforks out are going to keep poking him. But the vast majority of America is not the blogosphere or the like woke Twitter. Like most people are just going to be like Justin Timberlake, a very entertaining performer who is on SNL and makes me laugh sometimes. I enjoy the Super Bowl halftime show. Like most people are going to be nonplussed and not even think about that.
Yeah.
And maybe he'll bring out Jimmy Fallon too.
Probably.
Oh, man.
They'll probably just do an EU sketch for 15 minutes. That's the entire Super Bowl.
All right. Well, we got to get back into the album recounting here. So let's talk about Future Sex Love
Sounds.
Yeah. Obviously, it's his, you know, kind of accepted masterpiece, a gigantic commercial success, more with Timbaland than with the Neptunes this time. Sexy Back was his first number one hit and definitely a song that kind of made a lot of people take him seriously where otherwise they might not have before.
Now, I'm going to interrupt you. and say, speaking of Sexy Back, so you did a ranking of every Justin Timberlake song.
I did. That's true.
And you had Sexy Back number one. Would you,
if you say so?
Would you still have it number one?
Certainly for the purposes of that article, I would. I don't know if I'd necessarily call it like my, you know, personal go-to Justin Timberlake jam, but I do think that, like, yeah, if you were to explain Justin Timberlake's greatness in one song, I think Sexy Back would be the song you'd go for.
Okay.
You sound like you disagree.
No, I love Sexy Back. I don't know if it would be my number one.
It was like my ringtone for a while.
Well, it's too fitting for you, Joe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, do you remember when that song came out that every newspaper headline, magazine cover line, like, was always, so-and-so is bringing blah back. It was obnoxious. It was so bad.
Do you remember Al Gore at, like, that year's VMAs talking about bringing Sexy back?
I honestly do not remember that.
That was a thing that happened. I'm fairly sure anyway. But yeah, it definitely became...
I'm bringing climate change awareness back.
I think it was like that, basically. But yeah, it definitely became part of the culture and, you know, a huge hit. And the success just kept on rolling for him after that. So Jason, you want to just kind of riff on Future Sex Love Sounds for a minute?
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing is, so for the 10-year anniversary a couple years ago, I wrote this thing when I was at Fuse. Shout out to Fuse. That I said that, like... the first half of Future Sex Love Sounds is like, if it was on its own, it would be like the best pop album of the century.
Actually, so since you quoted Me to Me, I'm going to quote You to You, because a friend of mine was doing some Timberlake digging recently and found you a quote from you saying that it was the best first half of a pop album since Off the Wall or Thriller.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. I think that the run of the first six songs is like just like enormous, like that. I mean, you're getting the title track, Sexy Back, Let Me Talk to You,
yeah, Sexy Ladies,
yeah. My Love, Love Stoned, What Goes Around Comes Around.
There's, like, some jams right there.
Holy crap, man. Like, yeah. That's unbelievable. And obviously it falls off after that, but that's untouchable to me.
Totally.
Yeah, it's a pretty dynamite run. And even though it does fall off in the second half, it doesn't fall all the way off.
It doesn't fall all the way off, but compared to that high. And the whole thing is also, when you listen to it straight through, like, you know, you have that intro to My Love, like, you know, you have these.
So good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all about it. You have, My Love might be my number one favorite Timberlake song.
Disqualified for one reason. I'm pretty sure you know what the reason is.
Candle Guy. No, I love that.
You can't honestly try to defend Candle Guy. They did not call. No one has ever called T.I. Candle Guy. Never happened.
I don't know. I was. The thing is also that was like, you know, when sometimes you have these pop projects or hip hop projects that have like one or two guest rappers, and they're usually like the rapper of the moment, and when that song hit, it was such a moment for T.I.
For sure.
Like, I remember having, like, I had a, this is so lame of me to remember, but like, I had like a mix CD where the first song was My Love, and then the second song was T.I. What You Know, and it was like my favorite album for like a year, and and it was just like, yeah, and it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, and shout out to the 3-6 Mafia as well, right?
3-6 Mafia. Yeah, what an album.
Some bangers on that one for sure. Do you have a favorite on that one, Joe?
I think I, you know, not to just echo Jason, sure, but I think My Love is probably the strongest one, and the opener to that is just like pure genius. Like, it's so interesting and unnecessary, risky. But I mean, yeah, like What Goes Around is incredible. Summer Love is fantastic. I think in terms of like deep cuts, like Damn Girl, which I think was
so good.
Like, so good. It's him doing like Prince doing ridiculous Prince, and it just works so well. It's so cheesy and funky. Yeah, and I mean, it's cool that 3-6 Mafia is on there. I mean, I think the last few songs do definitely kind of keep it from being a perfect album. In Losing My Way, he does rhyme job with Bob, which is it's a pretty tough stumble to get over.
Yeah, it's a hard workaround. Got to shout out Love Stoned. It's probably my personal favorite song on the album.
So yeah, that was when the album was out, Love Stoned was my favorite song on the album. And it was like my favorite song of that year. So you talked about indie snobbery. That was like, 2006 was like the height of my indie snobbery.
It was a good year for indie
snobbery. My favorite album that year was East by Joanna Newsom. And like Silent Shout by The Knife. But like, boom. I had such a huge, like, I had so much love for that Timberlake album. That was like the one pop album, and like that, and like the Nelly Furtado album, that like really like rocked me.
Well, this was at least Justin Timberlake kind of meeting the indie snobs halfway.
Yeah.
He does. He starts kind of messing with like interesting song structures and you know, these epics that last for 6 or 7 minutes and multi parts and you know, weird soundscapes and all that. You could argue that this was sort of like the point before he takes it too far.
Yeah.
You know, even I think. You know, I remember like the What Goes Around video with Scarlett Johansson, directed by one of the Cassavetes sons, I think. that's a bad video, and it's like 10 minutes long, but not that much happens, which becomes a recurring trend with Justin Timberlake in the future. But this album, like you know, every pop star has one album like this where it's just everything works.
Yeah,
and this was certainly it for him.
Even you know, even like the cover of him, like
sure.
I was just gonna say,
trampling on the disco ball, just like a perfect image of, like it's so memorable, and you know he had the shaved head at that point and the suit and yeah, man, it was what an era, like what like you think about like pop eras for certain artists, like that one was like nuts,
no doubt. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the cover is just so smart too because it tells you it's like, okay, disco ball, this is a dance album,
yeah,
but this is a new kind of dance. I'm smashing
the
old
album.
Kind of dance and moving on into something else, and like the energy with that leg up in the air right before it comes down. It's very smart.
As if disco didn't have a hard enough time
right. In
the early 80s. Yeah. Now Justin Timberlake's got to come around and just put a boot to it. And
you know what really would have killed the album cover, though, is if it was the exact same thing, but he still had that bleached blonde poodle hair,
ooh.
The curls, and you would look at it and you'd be like, oof, I don't know if I want to buy this one anymore.
I'm glad that the curls got mentioned on the podcast. I love looking back at some of those old photos, and like, his hair just like looks like straight up pasta. It's unbelievable.
It really is like
that ramen haircut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
If you really think like him and Harry Styles, like both did the exact same thing. They had like these very famous like haircuts when they were in the boy band, and they were like, gotta get rid of it. I'm solo now. Let's go.
Yeah, it was a good symbolic gesture on his part. So you were talking about kind of this being like the era of Justin Timberlake and you know, his pop supremacy. He was on a number one song that wasn't on this album from this year. Do you remember what it was?
So is this the Timbaland Nelly Furtado Give It to Me?
Give It to Me. That's absolutely correct.
It's like
the number one hit.
Least memorable song ever, but
you're squinting at me, Joe.
I barely remember that
song.
So it was basically just a total momentum number one for him, for Timbaland, and for Nelly Furtado. And obviously Nelly Furtado and Timbaland also had a major album together at the time. And it's basically just the three of them taking shots for three verses. I think Timbaland takes shots at Scott Storch. It was rumored that Fergie was the recipient of Nelly Furtado's kind of subtweets.
Whoa.
And Justin Timberlake, they say, was actually returning fire against Prince, who was apparently not a fan of Sexy Back. And Justin Timberlake has the line like, you know, sexy never left, and how come everybody's on my shit?
Oh, wow.
And like, that was the number one single in 2008.
Yeah, it's not very good.
I mean, it's not like a classic, certainly, but it's kind of a fun, just like, you know, three pop stars at the top of their game just kind of swagging out on everybody. Like, you can't really hit on that.
I joked for a while that I wanted to write a book about Timbaland's 2006, just like documenting every. Because he had like some other amazing, like he had that song, I don't know if you remember, there's this Young Jeezy song, 3 AM, which is like one of my favorite Young Jeezy songs. And Timbaland did that, and he did Nelly Furtado, and he did his own album, and he did Future Sex Love Sounds. Like, what a year. That's like the greatest producer year ever.
Yeah, it was kind of like when we were talking at a meeting recently about the second wave that Pharrell had in 2014, where like after five years or so of just not really being the guy, he came back and had three of the biggest hits of the year and was all of a sudden the biggest producer in the world again.
Yep.
That was sort of the same thing with Timbaland at the time. Like when he and JT worked together on this album, he was, you know, he was at probably the lowest point of his career. Mm-hmm. But yeah, him and then Nelly and then this song, and now he's you know, lording over Scott Storch again. Like, that's a pretty incredible turnaround. And another JT and Timbaland song for this period that I want to talk about is AO Technology. You guys remember that song?
Oh, I loved that song. It's a terrible song that I love.
Yeah, like it's such a straight rip of everything going on 2020 Experience,
oh,
and like just
God.
50 Cent kind of talks over it a little bit, but it kind of shows you like what power those two guys had at the time. That 50 Cent, it was not long before the biggest rapper in the world, is just kind of stealing pages out of their playbook. It's pretty incredible.
I mean, literally that song is about like, hey, technology exists that we humans don't need to have sex with each other anymore, but we still should. That's the part of that song.
That's a beautiful moral, Jason. Are you really going to try to hate on that?
Yeah.
come on.
Yeah, that song's insane.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
Also, around that time period, we have 4 Minutes, another Justin Timberlake, Timbaland, Madonna song. This song's great. You're crazy.
That was Madonna very showing catchy. Up 10 minutes too late, or four minutes too late, I guess. But
the beat sounds like it's farting.
The beat does sound farting, but honestly, all of Timbaland's beats sound like farts.
The good ones, anyway. Yeah. Not
true. No, that is true. Yeah.
So after this period, Justin Timberlake, you know, he kind of sits on the sidelines for a while from the music world, but he does like a million other things, movies and restaurant endorsements and sports award shows and stuff like that. Do you guys have like a favorite non-musical Justin Timberlake memory from this period?
I mean, Social Network. But honestly, like, I remember, you know, when I was like a junior staffer at Billboard, just like in 2011, 2012, like just like people, we would talk about like Timberlake as like this sleeping giant, yeah, that like, when is this guy going to come back? I mean, the fact, like, we'll get to it, but it took 7 years to come back. That's like, for someone who had that much success with Future Sex Love Sounds, like having that long of a break was just like, it was kind of mind boggling.
In my head, it was even longer than 7 years. Yeah. Like, looking back on it now, 7 years doesn't seem like that long a time. Yeah. Like, we've had artists go 4 or 5 years.
It was just so big. It was just like, yeah, it's true. It, yeah, you're right. It wasn't that long, but yeah.
It definitely felt like it at the time. But yeah, Social Network, one of my favorite movies of the century, probably. And you know, Timberlake, he got some kind of flack. I think people thought he wasn't really trying that hard in it, or that he was just kind of playing a version of himself. But I thought it was perfect casting. I can't imagine anybody else in that role.
Yeah. But like, it just like, to go back to the 7 years thing, I guess like the closest comparison is like, so it's been 2 years almost exactly since the last Rihanna album. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine if she didn't release another album for 5 years. Right. Like, people would be like, what the hell is going on with Rihanna? Like, we need another. It's 2023. Where the hell is Rihanna?
Yeah, like, even she. How long was it in between Unapologetic and Anti? It was like 3 or 4 years, right?
It was like three and a half,
yeah,
somewhere.
And that certainly felt like an eternity, too. So, yeah, like double that. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
What about you, Joe? Do you have any fond JT memories from this memorable period of inactivity?
No,
I mean, I think at this point, like, it's overplayed, but I would like to bring us back to a time before it existed. And the first time that you watched Dick in a Box,
hilarious,
it was just like astonishingly funny. Like, it was a great, like, unexpected joke, and the song, like, sounded like a real song that would be on the radio.
Yeah, it kind of had, like, the early 90s swag, and that was, yes, like, before that was a cool thing to revive.
Exactly, yeah.
So that was kind of funny. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember these cultural
too
touchstones.
Too many douchey Halloween costumes later. Like, it's not really that funny, but, like, I mean, Lonely Island was on fire at the time, and, you know, that was such a smart move for Timberlake to, like, show off comedy chops, but also seem a little indie cool, because, like, Lonely Island was very, I mean, they got their start, like, underground, well, not underground's not the right word, but, like, you know, videos online that, like, the cool kids liked, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and proto-YouTube stuff, too, right?
Pre-YouTube, yeah.
That song was, this is definitely a major part of the JT story. I think you returned to it a couple years later. Remember that Lady Gaga song, The Three-Way?
Yeah.
Fine.
It was all right.
Yeah, that was, I don't, you know, what was a bad Justin Timberlake song in, like, I guess like 2010? The Shock Value 2 song, Carry Out. Come on, that man, Carry Out.
That song was okay, but it's another like JT extended food metaphor.
Yeah.
Which he dips into like a couple times too many in this period, and then it was probably a bad portent of things to come. So yeah, speaking of, so in 2013, the alarms blare, and we find out that he's coming back with the 2020 experience. Turns out to be one of two 20 tracks of Justin Timberlake after having zero for 6 years, 7 years.
2.5 hours.
Yeah, and then they're not short tracks either. They're distinctly long tracks. And, you know, at the time, I think everyone was really glad to have him back. I remember the reception to Suit and Tie wasn't necessarily overly positive. But when the album came out, it basically got great reviews everywhere. It sold something like 900,000 copies in its first week. You know, he has the Lifetime Achievement thing at the VMAs. I think he does pretty well at the Grammys. And 5 years later, I don't know who's reffing for this album still. What's your enduring memory of 2020 experience?
I like it. I think that it's a, I mean, let's talk about part one.
Sure.
For right now.
Although I'll interrupt you just to say that, like, looking back on them now, I really do think that I do consider them together. I think they are two parts of kind of the same
probably
album
true.
Experience. So,
part one, at least, I think it's a really good album. I think that, like, some of the songs are too long. To me, it's just like, it goes from Future Sex Love Sounds, where he's just like a solo star, and he's like single and it's all about sex, and like 2020 Experience is just like about how he's married and like mm-hmm. how he's happy and how he's found peace, and like I don't know, it was actually kind of moving, and the fact that like, you know, he was so like, I think he really handled like that subject in an interesting way, mm-hmm. and it wasn't like sleepy, like obviously, like, you know, it has personal relevance to me because I walked down the aisle when I got married to Mirrors, so like
that is true. I get it
and like but like I just think that it's really interesting, like the way he did it. There are some parts of that album that don't really work, but for the most part, like, you know, Push Your Love Girl, and I'm not a big Suit and Tie fan actually. Tunnel Vision, Mirrors. I love Let the Groove Get In. Like, I think that song's great.
Well, so my experience listening to Let the Groove Get In and a number of the other songs you mentioned, really most songs from this period in general, is like 3 minutes in, I'm like, oh man, this is a good song. Like, I forgot how good a song this is. Why don't I like this song more? And then I get to the 5 minute mark and I'm reminded of why I don't like the song more, because it keeps going. And then it's 6 minutes, 7 minutes. And I don't mind long songs. I'm a long song guy, especially like from artists that don't normally do them. I think that's cool.
Yep.
But he just doesn't have the ideas to sustain them.
Yeah.
And that gets to be a problem, because every single song, like even the songs that I love on this album, there are some songs that I love on this album, we'll talk about it more in a second, but every one of them goes on 2-3 minutes.
Why has he ever talked about why he did that? I don't think I've ever read.
I remember at the time he had some quotes about how he was like, I think he was like really getting into like Pink Floyd and Queen. And he's like, well, why can't we do this for pop songs? And
I mean, I think the interesting thing is that most, like, this is how most pop songs are made. I mean, like, you go back to the 80s, like, a lot of times they would record a pop single and the studio version might run 9 minutes, and then they cut it down mercilessly to get to the best three. You know, I think the original Ray of Light from, I mean, this is of course not 80s, but the original Ray of Light ran nearly 10 minutes, and then they cut it down into something that made sense for a single. And I just think like what they could have done that with this, and it would have been, and then, you know, maybe cut the track list in half and it could have been another near masterpiece. But they let it kind of breathe out, and you know, that's its own creative decision, but it certainly makes for an exhausting complete listen.
For sure. Yeah. It's like an album of 12 inch versions basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I did want to ask you, Jason. I don't know if I ever actually like talked to you about like why you chose Mirrors, or how you came to that decision to walk down the aisle to it. Was that a you or Vanessa decision? Or?
That was a me decision. Okay. Part of the reason why was because we were just starting dating. We had been dating for a little bit when Mirrors came out in like February 2013, but we took a trip around that time, and Mirrors had just come out, and we just loved Mirrors, and we listened to it like a million times. It was just like one of the songs that we listened to a million times. And then when we were planning our wedding, I was like, we got to walk down the aisle to Mirrors. Okay. And like, she wouldn't be shy to say that my wife like was not into it. Like, she's like, well, not into it. She was just like, how is that going to work? Like, what? So I had it so specifically in my head where it's like, I would come out and the whole wedding party would walk down the aisle, and we time it so that when the song flips to the place where it gets a little bit quieter and the you are the love of my life, Vanessa would come out and walk down the aisle. The funny thing is that the song was so long that we actually had to, when we were like rehearsing, people were moving too quickly that I was like, all right, just like take your time walking down the aisle, because like basically everybody had to walk down in like 30 second allotments. So it was a little bit of a
Bridezilla.
Yeah. Don't move too fast.
Typical.
Yeah.
So before we move on from this album, one song I think we do have to mention is Blue Ocean Floor, which is maybe the biggest anomaly in the entire Justin Timberlake catalog. Just this absolutely gorgeous, atmospheric, 7 minute closing ballad. Sounds more like a Frank Ocean song than Justin Timberlake.
Can you
song.
Imagine just interviewing Justin Timberlake solely about Blue Ocean Floor?
That's
all.
I can.
Oh my
yeah.
God.
That's all I want to talk
It'd be
about.
Awesome.
You're a big fan of this song, right, Joe?
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. And, you know, I mean, I think that's the thing that the length of this album affords is a few diversions that maybe otherwise, if it was like a tight pop album, would not have been allowed. But unfortunately, then you get some dreck with that. But yeah, it's a gorgeous song.
Yeah, and there is a great album to be had here. And I actually did like an edit once, I think, when I was writing for Pop Dust, where I took like 5 songs from the first album and 5 songs from the second album and made like the 10 out of 10 experience. So it was my very
well,
I like that. But I think there's also just something that needs to happen with the editing of the songs, like what you were saying, like some of the 7 minute ones could easily be 4. And then, you know, then somehow you've got your perfect album.
For sure, yeah. And some of the songs on the second album that are sort of a note, like Drink You Away was kind of his first delving into country, mm-hmm. which we may hear more of in a couple of days to come. And my personal favorite is a sort of an underrated song, I think, called Not a Bad Thing. It was the last track on the album.
That was a big hit, yeah.
It was a big hit, but, like, do you really remember that song being
a
big hit?
No, no one remembers it. Yeah. But the whole thing has had, like, a viral video.
But I think the viral video was almost the problem. Like, it was too cute a video, yeah. and it might have kind of overshadowed the song a little bit. Yeah. I think that's a really lovely song. Like, yeah. That's one of his best love songs, I think.
Yeah, I like that song. I like Drink You Away. My like, lasting memory of 2020 Experience Part 2 was that it came out, I was in Vegas for the iHeart Radio Festival, mm-hmm. and he was the headliner, and, like, 2020 Experience Part 2, like, came out either, like, the next day or, like, that day, and I hadn't heard it yet or something like that. And I remember he played a bunch of songs from it, including, like, that True Blood song and, like, some of the others. And
kinda I kind of like that goofy-ass True Blood
what's
song.
What's the Drake song?
Cabaret.
Like, he did that stuff, and I was just like,
Here's one thing I'll say about that. I feel like when 2020 Experience Part 2 came out, people were already fatigued with the length of the first one.
Oh, yes.
And then they got a second one, and they were just like, come on. But I think listening back to them, the second one is pretty much as good as the first. Like, I don't think, like, people were definitely like, oh, first one was pretty solid, but this one can't deal with it. Like, they're pretty much equal in terms of quality.
I think if you flipped the release order of the two of them, the reputations would flip too. I mean, maybe one's a little stronger on the whole, but I agree with you, Joe. Like, I think that the first one was a little overrated at the time. The second one was definitely a little bit underrated.
Yeah.
You're unconvinced, Jason.
Yeah, I don't know. I think part two is just not, it's not there, but
I think people just didn't want it at the time.
Yeah, certainly no one was asking for more Justin Timberlake after the first album.
What's interesting is that it could have worked. Like, in theory, like, you release, like, three singles from the first album in the first, over, like, a 6 month span, and then you're just like, surprise, here's another album, like, here's another single that you haven't heard yet, and, like, but the singles just didn't really work.
Yeah, and then they released them in a bad order. I think it was like
Take Back the Night,
yeah. And then TKO, which was
Tunnel Vision Part 2.
And then they did Not a Bad Thing, which I think they always knew was the best of the three singles, but they were like, oh, it's too much like Mirrors, it was going to overlap with that, and so they saved it, and by the time they got to it, we were just done with them.
Yeah.
But so he disappears for another couple of years after this. And before he comes back with the new album, he just kind of randomly tosses off a number one single in 2016, Can't Stop the Feeling.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like our office is very divided on this song. We're very evenly split between people like, oh, yeah, that's a fun song. What's your problem with that song? And other people are just like, this is like the worst he has to offer. Where do you guys fall in the divide here?
Where do you fall, Joe?
I thought it was, I didn't like it. It's just too obviously an attempt to write a hit. Mm-hmm. And a summer song, but I will say my feelings towards it changed significantly after seeing the Trolls movie and in the context of the movie.
The great thing about you, Joe, is I have no idea if you're being serious.
I'm not kidding. Okay. In the context of the movie, it like actually fits and makes sense and made me think it's kind of adorable.
All right, so I know we're running long here, but you have to explain to me what the context of the song is in the movie
just,
Trolls.
It's basically, there's a grumpy troll. And they have to convince him to, like, not be such a grouch and, like, to open himself up to, like, the fun in life. And the song makes sense in that. Like, in the sense of, like, a kid's movie, like, Can't Stop the Feeling, like, convincing someone to dance and enjoy life, like, is actually adorable. But in the sense of just hearing it randomly in a vacuum on the radio, I'm kind of like, ugh, this is so, like, obvious.
Well, it's a good thing you saw the movie Trolls then.
Well, it was an airplane movie.
It's a definitive airplane movie right there.
I will say very similar, so I have not seen the Trolls movie, and I really, really dislike Can't Stop the Feeling. I think it is. I actually think it is his worst single. I just think it's like, I just think it's so lazy. Like, it's just like, I don't know, it's just...
Like, it's more lame than lazy to me. Like,
The songcraft is
the songcraft. Yeah, it's there. Like, that's a pop song. I mean, like, maybe it's not like a cutting edge pop song, but like, I think
there's no misplaced note.
The line between that and Uptown Funk is not that.
I disagree.
No?
But here's what I will say to Can't Stop the Feeling. Maybe like, you know, it was like months after. Yeah, it was when the Trolls movie came out. We visited our little niece and nephew who were, I guess, were like 10 and 7 at the time, 10 and 6, I guess. And they were so amped about Can't Stop the Feeling, like, because they had seen the Trolls movie, they loved the Trolls movie, and they were like, yeah, like, they played Can't Stop the Feeling while we were there for one night, like, 8 times. They were like, let's play it again! And they just knew every word, like, such, I mean, yeah, it just seems like a song.
Even that wasn't enough to
No, I mean, no, I really dislike that song.
Oh, that's a shame.
But he hates his nieces and nephews.
Yeah, that's true. I know, he thinks about them every time he hears it. I don't blame him. So actually, do you guys even remember that Justin Timberlake released an album last year, very technically? He and this guy, Mitchell Owens, did the soundtrack to the Jessica Biel vehicle, The Book of Love.
I don't remember that.
No, yeah, it's listed on his Wikipedia discography.
I don't know if I dispute that.
It seems like it's a real thing. Now, I don't know if, like, Mitchell Owens was doing all the work and Justin Timberlake was sitting on the couch going like, yeah, sounds great. Like, let's go with that. But it's actually, like, a kind of lovely, thematic, movie score. It's not... You know, there's only one vocal song on it. It's him and the other guy doing a cover of Magnetic Field's Book of Love. Huh. Go figure. But, I mean, like, I was listening to it today definitely for the first time, and I was actually kind of enjoying it. So, I don't know. If you're listening now and you have no idea this thing exists, you can go confirm it for yourself. Check it out on Spotify. We obviously don't have to dwell on that. So, that basically takes us to modern day. the more anticipated new Justin Timberlake album, Man of the Woods. We've heard... 3 songs from it so far. One of us, I won't say who, has heard significantly more than that already, but we don't need to talk about that. But so which of the songs have you guys been digging, if at all? How are you feeling about the rollout going into Friday?
I like Say Something. I like the Stapleton song. We haven't really talked about it before now, but
I don't think so.
It's definitely a highlight, I think. So
I excuse me. The Stapleton song Say Something, another, like what you were saying with the 2020 stuff, like 2 minutes into it, I was like, oh, this is solid. And then after 4 minutes, and it's a pretty repetitive song, I was like, we hear Say Something many times. I was just like, oh, God, like this needs a rap. What was the first one called again? What was the
Filthy.
First single?
Filthy.
Doesn't it feel like that came out like 5 months ago at this point?
I would say Filthy is not a perfect song, but I appreciate that it's a little risky for him. And it's just,
I called it,
we call it risky though. Like,
I called maybe it B minus. I would, on the Must Hear Music podcast, I described it as B minus future sex love sounds. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. B minus, maybe B if you're feeling generous, but yeah, it's certainly in that territory. Supplies is maybe his worst single. I mean, I guess if you're a Can't Stop the Feeling hater, then maybe that ranks below. But it might not be that bad if separated from that music video. But the video is going to overwhelm memories of that song, I think, for all time.
I got nothing.
So, do you guys have hope for this album? Do you have hope for the way it'll be received? Or is this just going to have to be kind of Justin Timberlake's first time taking a loss?
I think we have to hear the full album, honestly. I think this is so ridiculous to say about Timberlake, but like, he's an album artist at this point. Like, you have to like take everything as a package. I have no judgment yet, even though I don't like Supplies, but like, who knows, we'll see.
And I gotta plead the fifth,
right? Yeah, but it's worth holding out hope, I think, because when we were here a month or two ago talking about Reputation, and I think most of us were pretty exhausted by that rollout campaign. We had kind of mixed feelings on the advanced tracks. Then the album came and it turned out that the narrative leading up to it wasn't really that important, wasn't that big of a part of the overall product, and the songs that we heard about from it in advance weren't necessarily representative of the overall product. And I hope that that's the conversation we're having about this Justin Timberlake album after this weekend. But I'm a little bit skeptical, to be honest.
We'll see.
Yeah. So I have one more question for you guys, which is something that I think we're going to talk about on Billboard.com in a future article. But
a future sex article?
A future sex article, yes. Do you consider Justin Timberlake to be the best male pop star of the 21st century?
I would say yes.
Okay. And I'll just quickly kind of run down like the artists who I think might be the competition here. I think you're talking about him, Bruno Mars, Justin Bieber, Drake, and then depending on how you kind of want to define pop star, maybe Lil Wayne and Kanye West as well.
Yeah, if you put Drake in there, maybe Drake then.
It's tough because Drake, Drake doesn't really fit. Like, he doesn't dance. He's not he's not the same kind of performer. But he does have pop hits, certainly, and enough of them. And even though Justin Timberlake's been around since the beginning of the century, Drake's done so much more in volume in the time he has been here that it's probably about equal by now.
Drake has like more albums than him.
Probably, yeah, that's true. though, and maybe even longer albums, although divided more evenly amongst 20 tracks. But
what do you think? What do you think, Joe?
I think it's an interesting question. I think if we're just saying male pop singer or someone primarily mm-hmm. known as singer, I still honestly I feel like album catalog wise, maybe, but honestly, Bruno might have him beat there too.
Post Grammys, Bruno.
Bruno is a very I know the tide has turned against him, but he is a pretty consummate artist. Mm-hmm. who's done a lot of great stuff. I guess the thing with Timberlake is he had that one album that pushed things forward.
Yeah,
Bruno Mars has not pushed things forward, but he, I think, has certainly been more consistent. So I don't know.
That's fair. I mean, his lows are certainly, he hasn't had the kind of embarrassments that Justin Timberlake has kind of suffered in the last 5 years or so.
Really throughout his career, though, Timberlake has had a number of embarrassments and mm-hmm. gaffes. Bruno Mars, I think the worst thing that happened to him, he got caught doing cocaine once, basically, and then he apologized.
You don't remember that?
No.
He had the smiliest mugshot ever. This was way back in the day. But yeah.
If that counts as controversy for Bruno Mars, he's probably doing all right. But actually, I forgot about the shame on me. I forgot about the guy that I actually picked in this discussion, I think, and that's Usher.
Yeah, Usher's
who
not as consistent, but
he's definitely not as consistent. But we were talking about this on Twitter with our mutual friend Spike Eskin, and he kind of points out that the problem with Justin Timberlake is that he has a little bit too perfect an image, and that he didn't really have those kind of albums out in the wilderness, so to speak. I guess he has one now, but now Usher, you really got the peaks and valleys with him, and it kind of and he lets you in a way that Justin Timberlake never does. I don't know how important that is to a pop star, but you never really get a sense of interiority with Justin Timberlake. You never feel you're really learning that much about him from his music. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but
no, I think that's totally right. I mean, the other thing in his defense, though, is that he does so much and does it well. Mm-hmm. He is a very good actor. He's a pretty good comedian.
Sure.
he also can contribute to a project without overtaking it. I mean, he was in Inside Llewyn Davis and was an incredible highlight of the movie, but he didn't chew up the scenery. He was just a small part of it. He is very good at what he does. He can be the star, and then he can also be a minor supporting character. And most pop stars can't do that.
Yeah, that's fair. I want a little bit more ambition from Justin Timberlake. I think not, and I don't mean just ambition in terms of longer song lengths and
longer
album rollouts, but just try push himself a little bit, push his songwriting a little bit. I'm not necessarily interested in hearing about his roots so much. I'd rather him try to. Try to expand his own horizons, and maybe maybe that's what this album is going to be. Maybe this album is him taking shots and failing and succeeding in some spots, and I think maybe that's what he needs. And maybe we'd be talking about this album 5 years from now as his art pop or his four or whatever, the kind of down commercial album that maybe the fans come around to, and maybe it's a sort of a necessary thing for him to not have such unquestioned success for one album, and he'll grow as an artist as a result.
Yeah.
Here's hoping. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Joe and Jason, for stopping by. And
thank you.
Doing this.
Yeah.
Justin Timberlake
JT.
Yeah, man.
Go Eagles.
Go Eagles. It's definitely what Justin Timberlake's rooting for. Dirty babe. You see these shackles, baby. I'm your slave. I'll let you whip me if I misbehave. It's just that no one makes me feel this way.
Come in and celebrate Lowe's Spring Fest before it's over with 4 bags of Select Scotts Mulch for $10. Or to grow your garden, we've got 4 11.8-ounce Bonnie vegetables and herbs for $10. Give your garden and lawn the full spring treatment. Spring Fest, a festival of fun and savings for your garden and total home. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. Offers valid through 4/28 while supplies last, in-store only. Selection varies by location, U.S. only, excluding Alaska and Hawaii.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.